Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is James Thurber, the University Distinguished Professor of Government and founder and former director of the Center for Congressional and Presidential Studies at American University in Washington, D.C. He's the author of numerous books and more than 80 articles and chapters on Congress, interest groups, and lobbying, campaigns, and elections. And his latest book is Rivals for Power, Presidential-Congressional Relations. Welcome to Background Briefing, James Thurber.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, thank you. And the White House apparently is now saying it's going to reach a decision soon on the fate of Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who's been publicly humiliated by President Donald Trump, and both on Monday and now on Tuesday, with a Twitter onslaught calling the Attorney General weak a day after he called him beleaguered. And just to quote the latest tweet, Attorney General Jeff Sessions has taken a very, in caps, weak position on Hillary Clinton's crimes. Where are the emails and DNC server and intel leaks? And then he goes on to say Mr. Sessions was not looking into a report that officials in Ukraine had sought to influence last year's U.S. presidential election in favor of Mr. Trump's Democratic rival. So this is pretty unprecedented, isn't it? There seems to be a kind of an understanding that presidents don't go after their predecessors. George W. Bush didn't go after Al Gore, and Obama certainly didn't go after Bush, even though he had tanked the economy. And there were a lot of pressure on Obama to look into Cheney's role in torture. So has Donald Trump crossed an historical line that is likely to stain our politics into the future?
Well, the president is treating Mr. Sessions, the attorney general, as his personal lawyer. And that, of course, is not his role. His role is to uphold the law. And the president really, I don't think, understands that. And he's trying to have tweeter management of the attorney general, but also of HHS, a variety of departments, and it's chaotic, it's divisive. He really is quite bizarre in the way he is pursuing this. There is no historic precedent for this, of course, with the tweets, no, but in terms of asking an attorney general to investigate an opponent from the previous election, none whatsoever. It's unique. And it seems that the American public, in terms of its general reaction, is becoming immune to all of this bizarre and divisive activity by the president and his core loyalists. About 35% or so are still with him, and they like the symbol of this. And of course, he has done nothing in terms of getting Congress to pass some of the things that he's wanted. That's gone by the wayside, and that's a problem for him and his supporters, in my opinion.
But if 35% of the country comprise Trump supporters and they appear to be immune to evidence that seems to be manifest to the other 65%, 65% is quite a lot of people to work with. So why do you think he is, in effect, getting away with this up until now? I mean, the display before the Boy Scouts, I think, angered a lot of the parents of these Boy Scouts. It was so inappropriate and so extraordinary. You know, his new communications director, Scaramucci, otherwise known as the Mooch, says he loves the guy. He loves the guy. He kept saying how much he loves the guy. But Trump spews forth hate, division, as you've mentioned, character assassination, attacking Obama all the time and Hillary Clinton all the time, and relitigating the election and talking to these young Boy Scouts about this great election and Manhattan cocktail parties. And everything seems to be beyond the point of being inappropriate. Some people are questioning our president's mental health.
Well, yes, that has been there for a long time. The Republicans knew exactly what they were getting, because this is the kind of behavior that he had during the campaign, you know, demeaning women, attacking Hispanics, legal and undocumented Hispanics. This Boy Scout thing is just over the top in terms of what he talked about to these young people. It's usually a time of patriotic statements and about leadership. He hasn't shown very much leadership on his part. He leads, it seems, with fear. and he backs nobody, you know, except maybe his family. And that's a real problem when you're trying to govern. I think that there's likely to be a constitutional crisis coming if he fires Sessions and finds somebody who will replace Sessions to fire Mueller. And if he fires Mueller, then maybe the Republican leaders will have enough shame to do something. There's no shame among the Republican leaders in the House and the Senate right now. No one is standing up and saying things that I know they're saying behind the scenes. I have about 150 former students that are staff on the Hill in the leadership's office, majority, minority, and behind the scenes, it's chaotic in terms of how to deal with Trump because of his tweets and his really bizarre behavior.
Well, on Tuesday, Paul Ryan, the leader of the House, said President Trump determines who is hired and fired in the executive branch. That's his prerogative. Hardly a profile in courage, Senator Lindsey Graham objected to the idea that President Trump is suggesting firing the Attorney General. And, of course, it's pretty obvious that loyalty is a one-way street with Donald Trump. He expected his director of the FBI to be loyal to him, Mr. Comey, and that made Comey distinctly uncomfortable. But here you have the first and only senator for the longest time to support Trump, a man who really walked the plank for him. Who,
by the way, chanted, "Lock her up, lock her up." So he's not the most objective person to direct an agency, a department to look at her emails yet again. So it's not, you know, it's he should recuse himself from that if he stays.
Well, you know, we could get into a critique of how this relic from the Jim Crow South is turning back the clock in terms of race relations, incarceration, reviving the worst aspects of the war on drugs, etc. Does this therefore put us in a situation where we have a choice between wanting to keep Jeff Sessions on the job or having justice reach President Trump?
Well, it is a strange situation because Sessions has a very questionable background with respect to race relations, and he really brings up the old Southern strategy that started with Nixon for the Republican Party. It is a very questionable and objectionable route, and yet people are saying, well, he shouldn't fire Sessions at this point, both parties. If he does, I think it causes a problem. It really causes a problem if the next person, if he can find somebody to accept the job, fires Mueller. I think that's what creates the crisis. You know, Sessions and the Attorney General are loyal to the Constitution, the rule of law, and the American people, and the president. The bottom line is the president's behaving like he is his personal attorney. If he doesn't agree with him, he's going to fire him. And I just don't think that is what we've had in the history of the United States.
And again, I'm speaking with James Thurber, the University Distinguished Professor of Government and founder and former director of the Center for Congressional and Presidential Studies at American University in Washington, D.C. He's the author of numerous books and more than 80 articles and chapters on Congress, interest groups, and lobbying, campaigns, and elections. And his latest book is Rivals for Power, Presidential Congressional Relations. So just to speculate for a moment, as some are doing now, there is another route apart from firing Sessions and finding a replacement, and then in turn having that replacement basically say, I've looked into the Russian investigation, there's nothing there, and I'm therefore firing the special counsel. That's a scenario that would require the new person, whoever that might be, getting confirmation via the Senate. So to avoid that, Trump could do a recess appointment in August. That would be even more controversial, would it not?
It would be more controversial. He could do that. I don't know who would accept that job in this situation, but I suspect he could find somebody. The question is, you know, whether they were at all competent or not. But that certainly would trigger a major reaction. There's a major reaction now among the media by the left, the middle, and not far right, but the right, and it doesn't seem to affect his behavior. So I don't know whether that would trigger enough to have a constitutional crisis, but it certainly would be in that direction, especially if Mueller gets fired. I think that's what triggers things.
Well, but we can go back to Watergate, surely, with the firing of Archibald Cox and the Saturday Night Massacre, where both his deputy and then that's the second deputy at the DOJ refused to take the job, and eventually Robert Bork stepped in. So could you make the depressing conclusion that in Washington and in governance there's always a Robert Bork somewhere?
Well, there's always somebody, Dick Wilk, take that job as Attorney General, I'm sure, and especially in a recess appointment. I think if they had to stand up in front of the Senate and the hearings, they would be asked, will you fire Mueller if you're asked to fire him? And if they said yes or maybe, he wouldn't get confirmed, or she'd get confirmed. So, yes, there's somebody out there. The character and quality of those people, Bork, even though he is very conservative, is so much different than the quality of the people that are in this administration, including Sessions right now. Mueller's different. He has an outstanding reputation, and he'll go where he needs to go in this investigation, and he believes in the rule of law. And I've always thought that the rule of law in this will limit this president. And certainly separation of powers is limiting him, too, because he has gotten really nothing through Congress that he's wanted and really is not doing a very good job working with the people in Congress.
So if there is to be a constitutional crisis, the very nature of a crisis would mean that we would have some political tension, perhaps people in the streets. You know, without sounding cynical, we've already talked about the 35% of Trump supporters who are immune to facts and evidence. The Democrats don't exactly have their act together. The press is only believed by half of the country. Does that just leave what Bannon and company call the deep state to mete out justice?
Well, there's a lot in that question. I think definitely the president is governing in an evidence-free environment. I mean, he doesn't care. His people don't care. Mobilization of the American public is difficult. It's not like the anti-war movement or civil rights movement right now, although there was certainly mobilization at the very beginning of his administration. I don't see that happening because of the Democrats. The Democrats have a problem with a clear strategy, theme, and message against the president and for what they want. The key in this whole situation is the Republican leadership and whether they will stand up to this guy, and that's the major incentive against that because they've got unified party government, same party in the House, Senate, and the White House, and they haven't had it for a long time, and they want to get things done, but they can't. So there's a crisis in the Republican Party. They're split. The Democrats really don't have a clear approach. I don't see people going to the streets, but there might be a serious call for impeachment. And that's what I mean by a constitutional crisis. And it may go forward if Mueller gets fired. I don't know. I mean, we're in new territory here.
But in terms of the Republicans and the leadership in the House and Senate, is a crisis of conscience or a crisis of how do they get their agenda through and somehow get around the constant disruption that Trump causes? I mean, you could make the case that perhaps the Russian investigation has driven Trump deeper into the hands of Paul Ryan and the House because they could impeach him. It doesn't feel like there's much of a separation of powers. He's not exactly a hands-on president. He's more like an absentee landlord. He's basically saying about this key healthcare vote, you know, you guys better do it. But he's not helping them. So there's a sense, at least to my mind, that we don't really have much of an executive branch except for the kind of reality TV show that it's become.
Well, I think that the Republicans certainly are upset about not being able to go forward with a clear strategy for their agenda. And another approach that they could have taken, by the way, is to pass a bill investing in infrastructure in America, where they might have found some bipartisanship. They've put that aside. They've gone ahead with health care. It's going to fail. the major reforms in taxes are going to fail. The president gets in the way with his tweets with those things. I mean, at one point he said, I'm for single payer, you know, on health care. And boy, health care is sure complex. It gets in the way of them coming up with a strategy that will bring their right wing together with the others in the House and bring the people together in the Senate. He does not, in my opinion, understand the subtleties of separation of powers. He does not understand the subtleties of reciprocity in the positive sense of, I'll help you guys if you'll help me. It's really just random tweets and threats with no backing up of those threats and no interaction with the people that are key to getting things done. It's really quite strange.
Well, that sounds like he's on the path of crying wolf too often. But just in closing, James Thurber, you mentioned that there are a number of, what would I call them, your proteges, that students that have come through the Center for Congressional and Presidential Studies at American University that are inside the government and that they are witnessing this chaos firsthand. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, they have a clear agenda in the House and the Senate about what they would like to do, and then all of a sudden there's a tweet. A tweet that's maybe about Russia, the whole Russian connection has gotten in the way of their agenda, or maybe it's a odd tweet from the president at 3 a.m. in the morning about health care or about tax reform that just doesn't help them at all. He doesn't even have coordination among the communications team in the White House, let alone between the White House, the House, and the Senate. My former students that I chat with from time to time that work on the Hill report that things are, they're just not very pleased, to say the least, with the president, and they are trying to lead without him on the Hill, and that's a very hard thing to do.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate your time, sure. James Thurber.
Ian, it was a good discussion.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And again, I've been speaking with James Thurber, the University Distinguished Professor of Government and founder and former director of the Center for Congressional and Presidential Studies at American University in Washington, D.C. He's the author of numerous books and more than 80 articles and chapters on Congress, interest groups, and lobbying, campaigns, and elections. And his latest book is Rivals for Power, Presidential-Congressional Relations. We're going to take a brief station break and back looking into how the standoff between Trump and Sessions puts all of us in the unfortunate position of asking whether it is better to have a relic from the Jim Crow South turn back the clock or have Trump escape justice.